The monotheist would contend that their religion comes from God, which begs the question as to the meaning of this what God? What is the nature of this deity, and how might this manifest in the form of human language and texts, and how does this monotheistic dogma function? Is it in any way beneficial for the white race and its preservation, and indeed is it in any way beneficial for anyone, or perhaps simply a formula for slavery and a poison apple given to Snow White by the Wicked Witch of the West? The writer must concede that he has no distinct or definitive opinion as to the origin or the reality of any variety of monotheism. He pleads ignorance and does not in any way hold himself out as a representative authority on monotheism and its deleterious consequences, which can be tangibly observed in the historical record. Though monotheism has had its historical stains, it is by many claimed to be not only valuable but essential. However, it is essential only to the extent that it poses an existential threat to the lives of white people, as of the time of this writing and throughout, especially the history of Abrahamic religion which dominated the Piscean Age. Monotheism thus is a problem, and one which must be dealt with, and this in the most effective way. The varieties of monotheism can be divided into two broad categories: one which is a set of elements containing only one element, that being a monotheism which is racially supremacistic, its element being Judaism and its religion being that of a tribal supremacy over the earth by and for jury achieved through intricate legerdemain and manipulation tactics. On the other hand, there exists the variety of monotheism which purports to be universalist, for all people, but in reality is actually particularistic and serves as a cover for the racial and cultural supremacy of diverse groups of humans. Though universalist hypocritically and to all appearances, these universalist ideologies of monotheistic religion are inclusive of those not of the original ethnic stock which adheres to them. They may, however, be included only as a subordinate, or indeed, properly speaking, as a slave. The following list of monotheistic religions will be presented in light of their probable historical origins and a particular ethnic, racial, cultural group that has formed around this monotheistic conception and/or formed it themselves, either through themselves exclusively or as a syncretic cross-pollination of various related ideologies and cultural borrowings from other ethnic, racial, cultural groups. They will be examined in light of what is pragmatically useful or valuable for the white race and what is detrimental, not only useless but overall harmful, in light especially of the Rahowa and the power struggle between races to conceal their will to power and hegemonic aspirations behind the cover of monotheistic religion and its racial relationship, between that of the idea and the ethnos. Christianity, having already been discussed in a separate section, will be omitted from the analysis, but what will be added to the previous analysis of Christianity is that it has historically been associated with white people, and white people have been used by its formulators, the Jews, to serve as their instruments for the realization of their dominion mandate through such ideas. Whites, naive and gullible as they are, have gone along with Jewry's schemes and have sought personal advantage through participation therein, having been deceived by Jewry to view themselves as Israelites and to on that basis serve as their goyim cattle. Christianity and its mental influence have been discussed adequately in the foregoing article and in that of Christ Identity, Pro-White or Kosher Sup, as well as in the article Universalist Psychopathology, for more on which the reader may refer. Judaism, the remaining major monotheistic religions, will be discussed in the following. They constitute the remaining power share of this world and are systems of organization based upon ideology that serve to regulate and control the populations and keep them subordinate to the priestly caste. Most of the priestly caste relate to one another at higher levels in a cordial manner and are often bound up with one another regardless of the apparent strife extent amongst their mundane counterparts. Judaism is a religion of a racially supremacistic nature which serves the interests and political hegemony of they who call themselves Jews as of the time of this writing. The books by the Catholic author Michael A. Hoffman, Judaism Discovered and Judaism's Strange Gods, go only so far in analyzing the nature of the religion of Judaism and its consequences on this our world. Indeed, the religion of Judaism is shrouded in mystery, not only being concealed from the eyes of the goyim but being concealed in its hidden doctrine from the female Jews as well as the mundane or average Jew, though, Relative to other religions, it is a religion of initiation into the mysteries of black magic. Most Jews, the writer surmises, are initiated to varying degrees into the black magic witchcraft of Judaism and, being bound up with their Elohim or reptilian overlords, have a greater comprehension of their purpose on this earth than the non-Jews have of their own respective purpose within the cosmic scheme of things. Indeed, Jewry views themselves as a separate species, a stranger in a strange land, but, beyond that, a stranger with a hostile and antagonistic relationship to their non-Jewish host. As many are aware, the religion of Judaism is supremacistic and is motivated by what is called the Dominion Mandate, an obligation to conquer and enslave the earth and to absorb all of its wealth into itself for the Jews and their Elohim. These Neanderthals the Bible calls Adams, who were interbred with Elohim creating mankind on the earth. Jewry considers itself the elect or set apart race owing to this reptilian connection, and thus envisions itself to have an entitlement as granted from upon high to rule the world and absorb all the wealth of the Goyim into themselves. Judaism is a worship of these entities and is correlated with the planet Saturn, the Aeon captured by these reptilian aliens and employed by them as a matrix generating station to subject the population to mind control. Judaism is a religion properly called demonology, a black magic formula for enslavement and mind control of others. Jewry are in large part black magician intermediaries who intermediate between the cattle of humanity and the reptilian aliens as administrators of their Zion matrix of political economic control using black magic mind control and mental influence, especially in their religious programs of mainstream monotheism to enslave their chattel labor. Most of these ideologies they, via their reptilian overlords, have engineered as programs of slavery, mind control, world control. Jews and Judaism are intertwined in such a way that their religion, based as it is on racial identity, functions as a program of political action, and this not only in a mundane but in an occult sense. Indeed, it is a formula for the waging of a cold war via Kabbalistic black magic. Judaism is a manual of warfare sanctioned by reptilian aliens and possibly even created by them ab initio as such, giving Jewry directives upon which to operate and carry out their assault against all of that which they deem ungodly, i.e. that which does not subordinate itself to their will and that of their overlords. Jewry are thus, being subordinate to the will of their overlords, under the latter's influence, and are motivated toward enslaving, exploiting, sacrificing and killing all non-Jews who do not serve them as slaves or simply who they do not want as slaves. Their religion has found its extension in Christianity, which was further formulated by them as a mechanism of mind control to serve them and their deity. One might conjecture that the one deity is in fact a plurality of deities and may be governed by one major deity going by the name of Jehovah, or Yahweh. This is all very difficult to entirely comprehend. Clearly, Jewry venerates what they have anglicized as God, which represents the Ineffable One or the Demiurge, the monad whose transmission of its violent will to power has violated the pre-existent realms and has manifested upon these planes as a crystallization of the more subtle forms, materializing the spiritual through reducing the latter's vibrational frequency through the transmission of the word of the Logos. Such is spoken of as the creation by their reptilian masters as codified in their book the Tanakh, which is conventionally referred to as the Old Testament. The creation is the plagiarization of the higher planes by the Demiurge, and this violent force and aggression is venerated by Jewry and their minions, the Christians who tremble before their Lord. Judaism and Jewry specifically are the foremost enemy of the white race and are a being of a completely separate though symbiotically intertwined species. They are governed by the dark forces who serve the Demiurge and are thus a force which admits of no compromise, either total and utter submission to them and their Lord or extermination. Jewry's power lies in their witchcraft, their subterranean tactics of subversion and deceit, for which their Talmud and Tanakh prescribe a blueprint. Three aspects of the Jewish problem by Julius Evola discusses Jewry and the problem they represent, though it does not go into adequate depth in revealing the details of their essence or their existence. Miguel Serrano's works, foremost amongst which are Manu, For the Man to Come, discuss the grand conspiracy of the dark forces in much more detail, and the writings of Joy of Satan Ministries in still greater detail, prescribing occult means of fighting the occult war imposed upon all by Jewry and their masters. The work Contra Jury, Opposing the Dark Forces, also details the magical and manipulative tactics of Jury and presents a template for their visual identification and recognition, enabling one to pick up a Jew from the mixed multitude. To fail to face the threat posed by Jury is to ignore an existential threat to oneself and indeed to all, and is therefore unsupportable. Jury must be exposed and opposed with the goal of neutralization of them as a threat, else one lives on borrowed time without any prospect of a future either in this life or in the next. Christianity will be discussed first, owing to its representing the greatest enervating influence upon the consciousness of any who should fall under its spell. This notion of being subject to a mesmeric or hypnotic influence via the thought forms of Christianity must be taken literally and is not a mere figure of speech. This is discussed in copious detail in the works of Joy of Satan Ministries, especially exposing Christianity. The thought form of Christ has been ingrained in the consciousness of whites for 2 millennia and has instilled in their soul the Magian morality tendencies inherent in this egregore. The Christ-like behavior of this savior figure has conditioned the consciousness of the white race to be that of a pacifistic, cowardly sneak. One has no capacity to be open and honest and to simply manifest his inhibited aggression in underhanded and deviant ways, often and perhaps in most cases toward himself. The Christ archetype thus functions to weaken and inhibit the natural drives, to cause them to be bottled up in the pressurized canister of the self. Such a restriction of one's behavior leads of necessity to a generalized neuroticism, if the writer may employ a term from academic psychology. The obligation to self-censor and suppress one's natural inclinations is built into Christianity with its commands to turn the other cheek and judge thee not. To adhere in sincerity to the moral commands of Christianity is to shut down one's conscious mind and to live in a state of willful ignorance, refusing to face the harsh realities of the fact that judgment, moral evaluation of others is natural and healthy, and to attempt to suppress this tendency leads to neuroses, what New Agers might call chakra blockages, or preventing the harmonious flow of the energies of one's body and soul. To judge thee not is to impose upon another in the form of finger-wagging prohibition that they cease to think and to express their thoughts in word or deed. The finger-wagger, the censor, she who takes upon herself to enforce these moral prohibitions, seeks through this means to express her will to power within socially acceptable parameters. Christianity is will to power in ethics, as Oswald Spengler said. The expression of its will to power is that of the Faustian soul, an aggressive imposition upon others of its own particular package of obligations, prohibitions, and whatever sparse permissions it entails, its morality in short. For those who are the priest caste of Christianity, this clearly serves their will to power, enabling them to accrue to themselves temporal power and all of the advantages accompanying it, namely wealth and control over others. The function of Christian will to power is thus serviceable to this caste and to they who adopt its preachments and utilize their position or identity as a Christian to impose upon others their will to power: thou shalt XYZ, thou shalt not QRS. These are the structures of the morality of Christianity, simple and basic prohibitions and obligations. Granted, this serves its adherents in augmenting their personal power and wealth, but it does so at a great disadvantage, that being the violation of their soul, its subjection or subordination to entities, and its gradual merger with the hive mind structure of what the writer will call the demiurge, or what the Christians call God. Though this may appear virtuous, desirable, and agreeable, it is in fact a recipe for extinction of the soul through its absorption into the one or the demiurge, and moreover, its vampirization by the angelic host or entities with whom the Christian becomes bound. Thus, to all appearances viewed from the perspective of five-sense reality, the Christian has employed the ideology of Christianity as an instrument of his will to power. In reality, however, he has actually disempowered himself at the fundamental level of the soul through having his soul subject to disintegration through the hidden forces which absorb it into themselves. The more Christian the Christian, the more devoted to these ideas of Christianity, the more entrained he becomes with the thought forms of Christianity, the more easily he becomes possessed by these entities, and the more of a hold they have over his soul. The deception of Jewish-created Christianity lies in its false appearance of kindness and benevolence. All Nitzicki creed purports to be what it is not and does the opposite of what it claims. It purports to help others but does so only materially and only as a means of proselytism, of bringing the sheep into the fold or rather transforming the goats into sheep. Its false gifts are trafficked in only as a hook of Mary to hook in the lambs of God, and they who would seek to rebel or bite at the shepherd's crook, let alone at the shepherd himself, are slated for slaughter by the priests of the order of Melchizedek as heretics or infidels. The actual terminology deployed by the Catholic Church in its stigmatization of the non-Catholic. The promise of eternal life and immortality through undergoing various devotional prayers, the motions of Christian programming, rather than granting one this false promise, instead grants one a one-way ticket to hellfire owing to the above-outlined process of entity attachment and the vampirization of the soul of the person. This is presumably why the priestly caste wishes to have its sheep confined within their pen of the church, preferably as much as possible, as this facilitates the attachment of these entities and strengthens the programming. The programming disempowers the person and transitions them to the lake of fire and the second death post-mortem. To hear the words and experience the relics and aesthetic pageantry of the church is to immerse oneself in the atmosphere of these entities and to create a bind on the person through such associations, the person coming to view these experiences they undergo in the church as desirable and after a certain period essential, the person becoming a Christian and addicted to the holy water of organized Christianity. They render themselves a vessel of these entities and are thus under their influence and immersed to greater and greater degrees into the hive mind of the demiurge and become his servants and the servants of his angelic host, who impel the Christian to spread their religion zealot by zealot. Though this may not be entirely correct, the writer surmises it is a fair representation of Christians and the influence of Christianity and their fate in terms of its mechanics and influence, a faith in falsehood and false appearances, and a faith that transforms one over time into a wraith like the ring wraiths in J.R.R. Tolkien's work. Joy of Satan Ministries speaks in some of their lectures of how Christians over time take on a faded look, similar to Gollum who becomes enslaved by the ring. One need only observe old church ladies to see how they are of a faded complexion, and this proportional to their devotion to their faith. Gollum's ring of power may be an allegorical representation of the rings of Saturn, which, according to Norman Berggren in his book Ringmakers of Saturn, are ice crystal structures created by ETs, and, according to David Icke in his presentation The Moon-Saturn Matrix, these rings serve as a radio transceiver in transmitting certain vibrational frequencies to the Earth by the artificial structure of the Moon, which in turn traps the inhabitants of Gaia within its electromagnetic matrix web. The entire Christian program, presumably created by Jews from the beginning, was engineered by them in service to their Elohim, i.e. transdimensional reptilian aliens, and serves as a mechanism of keeping the population in fear and trembling, in a lower vibrational frequency state of consciousness, and thus incapable of transcending the limitations of this matrix prison. Christianity is the ultimate slave program which transforms once normal beings into automata whose minds are crystallized and incapable of overcoming these limitations save with severe modification and shocking forceful influence and experiences. The mind becomes limited to the spatio-temporal plane or dimension in spite of the claims to the contrary Christianity adduces as its treasures in heaven. The illusory heaven world Christianity preaches is in reality a world ill-defined and merely affirmed to exist without any detailed mechanical description of its workings or how and by what process one arrives at such a destination, save perhaps through the pseudo-spiritual expostulations of its devotional prayers. These prayers are themselves simply a representation of the thought forms which not only attract but which bind entities to oneself and transform one into a Christian, which is to say one of the goyim or cattle on the slave plantation of Zion. Christianity further disempowers its adherent throughout the life of the adherent having an obligation to work. Work means an expenditure of the life force, a dissipation of one's energies and their absorption into the entities which are bound to one through the process of church devotion. Though one should be a secular humanist, he too is bound to entities in whatever tavern he hangs around, both churches and taverns being run by Jews in most all cases and serving to absorb the wealth of the goyim into Jewry through inducing addiction in their customers, either an addiction to holy water or to fire water. As if this weren't bad enough, having to pay tithes and bar tabs, One must also pay with his soul, having his soul energy leached from him by these angels, aka transdimensional reptilian entities with whom Jury are bound and by whom Jury are genetically hybridized with Neanderthals. Further references which suggest that Christianity is a mere invention and should not be ascribed credibility or supported are here: Christianity Exposed, Wayne MacLeod, Paul of Tarsus, or Christianity and Jury, Savitri Devi. https://www.christianidentitycrisisandthejewishpeople, High Priest Jake Carlson, The Christ Conspiracy, Ocharius Exposing Christianity, Hunter, William L. Pierce, The Origin of Christianity, Ravillo P. Oliver, An Open Letter to All Christians, David Lane, Jesus Never Existed, Kenneth Humphreys. Though these above works approach Christianity from the perspective of a more mundane and naturalistic viewpoint, they raise significant points of criticism in terms of the actual historical reality of Christianity, its origins and the motivations of its formulators. In more esoteric terms, there may be some redeemable qualities within Christianity, both Protestant and Catholic. In the Catholic Church, there have been assimilated much in the way of pre-Christian symbolism, iconography, and textual and figurative representations of metaphysical principles and cosmology. The works The Symbolism of the Cross and Insights into Christian Esotericism by René Guénon, as well as the presentations of Bill Donahue, give insight, as does the work Central Sun by Pertschu, a German Arminist affiliated with Aleister Crowley. This does not mean that what is called organized Christianity today is spotless and pure or in any way desirable to traffic in. It simply means that what has been assimilated into it has value, and thus Christianity must not be viewed from a purely exoteric perspective. Indeed, to do so is to miss the point of its witchcraft, as it is simply a syncretic formula of black magic concocted by Jury to enslave the Goyim, as Nietzsche spoke of in his works, though not implicating Jury as the causal agent. To avoid the influence of this black magic witchcraft and its spread, one must avoid and expose Christianity for what it is, and this in the most explicit way, drawing upon the above sources, especially those of Joy of Satan Ministries. Failure to do so will augment the spread of Christianity and will enable the dark forces to continue to enslave the earth and to reduce all to witless slave drones who cater to the whims of their masters, the reptilians. Christianity is the foremost threat to white survival and indeed to truth, and thus must be ruthlessly opposed through prudent and effective means. To speak about burning churches or executing Christians simply plays to the victim-martyr complex of Christians and is ineffective. An informational spread of counter-propaganda against the Christian program is necessary, not only to deprogram the minds of its captive slaves and to liberate them, but to expose it for the lie it is and to ensure that a world in which spiritual truth can banish the darkness of its lies flourishes. Buddhism, the ideology of Buddhism, has, rightly or wrongly, that associative monotheism. It is a nihilistic version of monotheism, if the writer may be so bold as to claim not being an authority on the subject. It claims that nothing exists, that no determinative being exists, all is in flux and transience, and therefore there is no self, no identity, nothing that can be grasped conceptually nor that can be latched onto as a support of any development within the world. Only through the active nihilism of one's consciousness can any power be developed for the ever-changing fluxual self. Heraclitus took up this flickering torch of Buddhistic Promethean flame, the black light of transcendence through immanence, through the perpetual negation of the indeterminate and determinate immediate, the supersession of the transient illusory self. You never step into the same river twice, he had said, and one might amplify this with a corollary statement: the same river does not exist, at least within the ontology of Buddhism, which is an ontology of nihilism. Buddhism has been considered by such as Manly Palmer Hall as more of a philosophy than a religion, though that it entails a cosmology and a Weltanschauung with a determinate system of ethical principles. It could therefore be interpreted to be a religion and properly. The writer will therefore include Buddhism within his critique of monotheistic creeds, while acknowledging that Buddhism entails more of the philosophical orientation to being and less of a creed-bound dogmatism as the other monotheistic variants. Buddhism has become a popular ideology in the modern world as a mechanism of riding the tiger or coping with the conditions of contemporary society and its decline and fall. Buddhism in its primordial or original form of Theravada as expounded upon by Julius Evola in his work The Doctrine of Awakening, on Buddhist varieties of ascesis, is the only Buddhism which can be said to be authentic, all other varieties being distortions and corruptions of the original. Such variants as Mahayana are simply later distortions corrupted by the moralism of a crystallized philosophical worldview made by a decadent priest caste itself possibly inclusive of Jury as the perennial corrupter of the pure doctrine of tradition. Buddhism as a philosophy and indeed as an ascetic nihilism is useful to a degree in the development of the soul, its strengthening and detachment from the kaleidoscopic world of appearances that constitute the world and especially the ever-increasing chaos of the modern world of the Kali Yuga. It may be used as a tool in overcoming pain and effect and completely removing oneself from the world while acting within the world. Buddhism, in its proper forms conducing to empowerment, is thus a valuable tool. Its meditation practice is instrumental in developing the mind and overcoming hardships that would devastate the average mundane not practiced in the strategy of spiritual virility, this bracketing off of sensa and stimuli. However, unless one pursues a path of Buddhism of the unconventional nature such as Vajrayana or Tibetan Buddhism which follows a more left-hand path orientation, he will only go so far in his spiritual development and power. Buddhism in this letter form is more akin to the Tibetan Bonpo religion in its practices and is a primordial form of modern alchemy, the Ars Regia or oil art preserved to degree only in modern masonry. The average everyday forms of Buddhism are simply right-hand path pacifistic and nihilistic practices which serve the agenda of the control system in keeping the sheep in the sheep's pen, living a life of rule-following servility while the elite practiced the left-hand path beyond good and evil. These practices are spoken of in a fair amount of detail in The Shadow of the Dalai Lama, Sexuality, Magic and Politics in Tibetan Buddhism by Victor and Victoria Triamundi. The Christian authors of this work stigmatizes practices as evil, judging from their perspective of Christian Magian morality. Undoubtedly some or all of these practices are practiced by the elite and are done so as they are causally related to the accrual of power for themselves and dealing with higher entities that empower them. This in and of itself is not evil but only a relative good in relation to the purpose for which these practices are undergone. The true evil of Buddhism consists of its being a distortion of the ancient practices of the Ars Regia in the religion which was formulated by Siddhartha Gautama. It was originally, so the consensus view has it, formulated for the elite but trickled down to the slave caste and became a Middle Eastern or Indian version of Confucianism, a collection of stories and ethical and philosophical teachings which kept the sheep in line. However, in keeping them in line they were also curtailed in their ability to develop themselves and thus follow of necessity a right-hand path of pacifism leading to weakness and ultimate extinction. Buddhism, along with Vaishnavism, thus was the early version of Christianity for the Middle East and led and to this day leads to the reincarnation of the soul and its atrophy via entropy over time and ultimate absorption in the demiurge, i.e. God. This is called, as far as the writer understands, Nirvana and is put forth as a wonderful appearance, something to be striven for by adhering to the rites and regulations of the religion but is in reality a path of destruction just as Christianity's path is, a death cult leading to extinction. Joy of Satan Ministries had a collection of articles on the history of Buddhism called Buddhism, Doctrine of Evil, which analyzes the history of Buddhism and its destruction of the prior secret doctrine of the Ars Regia present in Tibetan Bonpo, which is the closest to the true Aryan doctrine as can be attained at this time of civilizational collapse. This is presumably why Buddhism was installed in Tibet and why Mao Zedong, a crypto-Jew, installed this program upon the Tibetans after his takeover and caused the extermination of much of the spiritual leadership of Tibet who retained this secret knowledge. That Germans such as Robert Hedekopf in his book Agartha praise Vajrayana Buddhism must mean that the secret doctrine is still a presence in Tibet under this mantle, and why certain contemporary advocates of Buddhism condemn Vajrayana or Tibetan Buddhism. The National Socialist made contact with the Tibetans as their movie Geheimnis Tibet reveals. What was not revealed was the occult connection they had and that their movie was only a public revelation of their presence Tibet. When the 12 body doubles of Hitler were found in his bunker at the close of the Second World War by Allied troops with him were discovered 12 dead Tibetans. Perhaps they had followed him in their astral bodies to Aldebaran via a black hole wormhole? This the writer can't say, but can only hold out hope for their return and the final victory of the Aryan race and its secret doctrine. As to Buddhism, it is useful as a crutch for spiritual cripples in the Age of the Wolf. In and of itself, it doesn't go far enough in escaping the jaws of Fenrir. Only the Ars Regio achieves this purpose. Hinduism is another monotheist ideology purporting to be for everyone while in reality being for the brown people of India. The origin of the term Hinduism derived from the British Empire, which arrived in India and labeled the various spiritual practices they observed Hinduism, though the spiritual practices were separate and only related to varying degrees. The antecedent form of Hinduism called Vaishnavism is a composite of Vedism and the Dravidian Negro shamanism and demonology that originally derived from the sunken continent of Lemuria, aka Pan, aka Mu. This juxtaposition of the completely diverse forms of ideology, the solar Uranian Aryan man coming from the Gobi Desert and the chthonic Tellurian lunar mother goddess religions deriving from Lemuria becoming mixed through the colonialist expansion of the Aryan race and their formation of empire. The creation of Hinduism or Vaishnavism was presumably undergone during the Ashoka regime, and Emperor Ashoka was the Indian subcontinent's version of Julius Caesar, the strongman backed up by Jury. That Jury existed within the Indian subcontinent at this time is reasonable to conclude, and this period of history follows the same pattern of dialectic that Jury employs to divide and conquer the nation, namely, create decadence and corruption amongst the upper class simultaneous to sowing seeds of discontent amongst the poorer caste and inciting the latter to riot and rebel through pacifistic or overtly forceful means. Jury's installation or fostering of Ashoka via financial means served the phase of their dialectic of putting order into the initial chaos they created in the first place. Thus, Vaishnavism is a religion which, installed by Ashoka as his Indian version of Christianity, served to unify the distinct castes and work toward the destruction of the castes originally outlined by the Aryans according to the Manava Dharmasastra and its Varnashrama Dharma, which outlined a strict segregation along color lines of the different castes, with Aryans constituting the Brahmanical priest caste as well as the Kshatriya warrior nobility, and the lower castes being comprised of the darker substratum of the races, the Dravidians constituting the Sudra or worker caste who were subordinate to the Aryans. The breakup of the caste system, similar to what happened in ancient Rome, was instigated by Jury as a means of acquiring more power for themselves as a rootless trader caste who interbred with the indigenous of that caste and thereby insinuated themselves into the caste system from without, eventually, again as in the case of Rome, acquiring enough power to enable their takeover to at least as great a degree as they were able. Hence what is called Vaishnavism, and which to whatever extent metamorphosed over time into contemporary Hinduism, is not an authentic Aryan religion but a syncretism of primordial Vedism and Dravidian shamanism, and which is hence authentic for the hybridized brown indigenous stock of modern India but not for anybody else. Should one wish to partake of this religion and its practices, he simply becomes assimilated into the culture of the brown people of India. Therein he may find some degree of spiritual truth, but spiritual truth which is completely mixed with foreign thought forms, and thus becomes confused mentally, and on the basis of this confusion of his mind becomes confused in his actions. Thus the ideas of Hinduism may hold themselves out as wonderful, wise and insightful. They are nonetheless appearances and illusions that simply beguile the mind of the investigator and lead him toward a state of pacifistic resignation and ultimate extinction on the one hand, and on the other an ecstatic Dionysian immersion in the left-hand path tantric exercises which lead toward the immortalization of his soul. The latter is a redeemable and more spiritually virile component in the broad category of ideas and practices now called Hinduism. It is the distinction between the right-hand path of contemplative immersion in the one, the demiurge, leading to one's extinction, and on the other the left-hand path of Kaivalya, immortality via tantric maithuna and other left-hand path techniques, the former leading to disempowerment, the latter to empowerment. Hinduism has become and perhaps was beginning a catch-all term for the sum total of spiritual practices in the region of the Indian subcontinent. It has value within it, but also much in the way of distortion. Though Sanskrit was an Aryan language, it is now a dead one and thus culturally foreign, as the basis of a living culture supplanted in India with the living languages of Hindi and the 22 other officially recognized languages of India. Thus it may have preserved the original Aryan culture to a great degree, but this culture cannot be accessed by any today save through modern languages, which are themselves distortions and syncretisms of the primordial language. Hence, in a world of ruins, one can discover treasures of the past, though to find them entails wandering amongst the ruins and in most cases getting lost, following blind alleys or paths to destruction. Since Vedism, one of the original Aryan cultures, is not Hinduism, and Hinduism is to Vedism what ruins are to an ancient temple in their midst, to follow the Hindu or Vaishnavic path must be understood to be an inauthentic path for Aryan man to out court. Aryan man can, however, venture amongst the ruins and still discover spiritual treasure therein, making use of these treasures pragmatically to empower himself and serve his race. Many such as René Guénon would contemptuously sneer at such as eclecticism and condemn they who do not follow a path which he considered to be an authentic tradition. His books Introduction to the Study of Hindu Doctrines and Studies in Hinduism present the mainstream right-hand path religion of Hinduism in terms of its symbols, meaning, cosmology and etc. in scholasticistic and relatively basic outline. Though inadequate in and of themselves, they constitute a general presentation of these concepts of Hinduism, part Vedic, part Dravidian shamanism. Julius Avila's book The Yoga of Power, which is a general critique of yogic practice, and Arthur Avalon's The Serpent Power present some redeemable practices within Hinduism. The book Tantric Kali, Secret Practices and Rituals by Daniel Odier, and Kundalini Tantra by Swami Satyananda Saraswati present some probably valid practices of tantrums and which could be subsumed under the category of Hinduism. These practices undoubtedly improve one's control over his soul and true self-serving to empowered through strengthening the self against countervailing forces one subjects oneself to. All things being equal, to participate in Hinduism wholesale in a manner of René Guénon is to subordinate oneself to the hybrid stock of India and to allow oneself to be absorbed into the cloaca gentium of the Indian subcontinent, whether one lives in Delhi or Detroit. Taoism, the religion of the Chinese, may have called Taoism or Taoism. It is a philosophy and a religion which can be construed as monotheistic, concerning itself with the great ultimate or the one. The distinction between this religion and that of others is that it is more oriented toward magical practice and is an ideological form of Chinese supremacy, being in the Chinese language and probably exclusive to Chinese people, at least at its higher echelons. The same, of course, could be said for all of the religions save perhaps Christianity, that at the highest levels the governing elites are all a racially distinct and unitary group. In Islam it is Arabs, in Hinduism it is the brown people of the Indian subcontinent, in Judaism it is Jews, and in Buddhism it is both Indians and Southeast Asians. Taoism is exclusive to the Chinese and is their ideological vehicle of their will to power, their expansion both culturally and racially outward, as their culture organism's necessary manifestation of its essence in time, in the world of becoming. Taoism had its origin, one may conjecture, in the expansion of the Aryan migration wave from Atlantis into the Gobi Desert area, and, once this latter was devastated presumably by a nuclear war as an instance of a larger cosmic war it then formed around in the Asiatic region. The culture of the runes, and manifested itself in the form of the Chinese hexagram system. That all of the runes of the Futhark fit within a hexagram is more than enough evidence to prove this when taken in conjunction with the anthropogenic facts of that region, the archaeological evidence of whites in that region paleohistorically. This magical system and related culture spoken of in Aliolia Bodhi's book Zen and Martial Arts reveals how the migrations of the Aryans brought the culture with them into the public consciousness. The hexagram system and the I Ching, which constitutes its source of meaning and philosophy, are thus Aryan in origin and were subsequently submerged in the mire of moralism by way of Confucianism, the secular social philosophy and system of ethics that serve to weld together the Chinese race, conferring upon them a restrictive set of ethics that have served to chain their minds to the mandarins and emperors who enslave them within a rigidified caste system. The natural tendency of the Chinese culture soul is one of the collectivistic and agrarian mode of existence, which rewards sheep-like conformism and was ripe for the spread of the Jewish program of communism. Communism was used to enslave their country to an even greater degree and subordinate them to Jewry, since the crypto-Jew Mao Zedong was installed as the strongman after the Boxer Rebellion. Further distortions of the I Ching and the magical system of the Aryan, both of which are complementary and neither of which can be properly understood in isolation from one another, had occurred, becoming blended together with Chinese shamanic practices with much symbolism and iconography of animal totems, etc. Perhaps they who are called the Chinese people themselves are simply an amalgam and variations on this theme of the mixture of the Aryans with whatever prior indigenous group existed in this region. Thus one can draw a sound inference that what is now called Taoism or Taoism is a syncretic amalgam of the prior Aryan culture and the shamanism which the Aryans encountered within this region, similar to the situation of the earliest period of Egypt with the Aryan conquest of the indigenous Nilotic Negroes, who were presumably either remnants of Lemuria or some type of Mediterranean Pelasgian stock. Taoism thus, for one not ethnically Chinese, would be only, like Hinduism and other major religions, even including Buddhism, a spiritual path unworthy of pursuit. Unless, like those few that are not completely intolerant of anything outside of themselves, one could simply select from what he wanted and cast aside the dross. This would imply he was sufficiently knowledgeable about what elements of these religions are authentic and proper to practice or derive value from, and that he was sufficiently discerning to conceal his selective bias from the hierarchy. The writer concludes, based upon his experience of being a fly on the wall of the various religions, that those which admit of an inner core are impracticable independently of the outer rind of the exoteric moralism and ethical practices, and indeed the sum total of cultural practice in which one must be submerged as a condition of advancement. He will make bold to say that it is indeed impossible to practice that which is foreign to oneself, as its foreignness, by virtue of this very fact, is inauthentic and imports into his consciousness foreign thought forms which create havoc in his mind, like the Chinese story monkey creates havoc in heaven. Thus, to tie oneself into the foreign egregores is to incorporate into one's consciousness the thought forms of the other, and to restructure one's thoughts to become other to himself and to the cultural organism of which is a part. This attempt to partake of the culturally foreign is an act of self-alienation, and thus an act of violence against oneself and his culture organism, i.e., his race. Much value may be derived from the vestiges of authentic Aryan culture, but it is no easy path to disengage oneself from the cobwebs and weeds of foreignness which have entwined themselves around the inner core of truth that was the preserve of Aryan man. The practices of such as Mantak Chia, a contemporary Taoist, may have some value as well as those of Jerry Allen Johnson. However, they must be taken cum grano salis and examined with kid gloves as means of safeguarding oneself against the foreign and its contagious influence. Those not ethnically Chinese, therefore, may derive much value from the cultural forms of this region, but they must first establish for themselves a solid foundation, indeed a fortress of their own culture, in which to strengthen and shield themselves and to forge a suit of cultural armor in order to avoid being harmed by the influence of the foreign and incorporating into oneself that which can only function as a bacillus in the body of they who are not sufficiently strong to deal with it, and to derive from it value that can serve to augment their own repertoire of weapons for usage in the occult war. As to the so-called ethics of the Chinese and their entire modus operandi, the maxim "giving before you take" applies as their serpentine strategy for the expansion of their will to power. The cultural offerings of the Oriental are a Pandora's box, within which are a series of nesting boxes, ultimately leading to a fortune cookie whose message is, "Round-eyed devil." Some of the ethical philosophy of Zhangzi and Sun Tzu may be drawn upon and is serviceable in the occult war, whereas most of the restrictive and inhibitive moralism of Confucianism and his followers, Chuangzi, Mencius, etc., are the dross which can be cast away with the shamanic elements both in martial arts and the broader Oriental cultural sphere, as they are for use by the masses as a mechanism of keeping them beguiled as a pedagogical tool and instructing them to play their limited role within their limited understanding of reality in the caste system. For they who wish to be adepts in both the occult and the mundane world against threats from without, it must be understood that the Chinese are affiliated with Jewry as far as the writer can discern. Thus, to involve oneself with the Chinese is to play with fire and betray secrets to the enemy. Their culture and soul must be studied from the fortress of Atlantis, and reconnaissance missions must be undergone with the greatest of caution. For example, to take Chinese martial arts or attend a traditional Chinese medical clinic is to situate oneself in the midst of the enemy enclave, whether this be in a Chinatown or simply in a separate business building. To traffic with the presumed enemy, though this enemy represents themselves as a friend, is again to play with fire, and only those who have asbestos gloves should undergo to do so, and only to the extent pragmatically useful. One thing which the wise can derive from the Chinese is to follow their lead in guile and secrecy. Their secret societies are initiatic and based on Taoism, and are racially exclusivistic and oriented toward power and the consolidation of power, by and for themselves adhering to the principle of Sun Tzu: if your enemy is secure at all points, be prepared for him. If he is in superior strength, evade him. If your opponent is temperamental, seek to irritate him. Pretend to be weak, that he may grow arrogant. If he is taking his ease, give him no rest. If his forces are united, separate them. If sovereign and subject are in accord, put division between them. Attack him where he is unprepared, appear where you are not expected. Occultism, Christian Kabbalah, and New Thought. The fin de siècle of the 20th century presented more opportunities for the Luciferians and related occultists to manifest the true doctrine of Lucifer in the sense of Albert Pike. At this time, many orders and groups existed, but a certain identifiable current called New Thought came on the scene and offered some pragmatic value for the aspirant. The American William Walker Atkinson specifically, who was alleged to have been a Rosicrucian, presented under myriad pseudonyms a variety of practical handbooks subsumable under the label occultism. From mental influence, yoga, mind control, developing concentrated ability, and magnetism, all of these occult abilities are put forth in individual topical works that serve as instructional material to convey these ideas to they who wish to develop these faculties. Though presented in a rambling and verbose manner with too many anecdotes and personal examples, they nevertheless encapsulate many of these ideas that are serviceable to the white race in its development of such psychic faculties and powers. The work of Atkinson, The Secret Doctrine of the Rosicrucians, specifically lays out the cosmology and anthropogenesis of our world and the metaphysical principles of reality, and this according to a more or less theosophical secret doctrine along the lines of Blavatsky and to some extent Miguel Serrano, only minus any explicit references to the white race, and indeed clouding and obscuring Serrano's correct conceptualization of paleohistory. The correspondence between these figures and their ideas supports the reality of their conception, which, given its perpetuation throughout history by high-level adepts, can hardly be spoken of as make-believe, especially they who were and are willing to die for their beliefs, such as the Cathars and Albigensians. Atkinson's works are valuable shorthand guidebooks which facilitate the development and strengthening of the soul following the Vom Maj, or left-hand path. How to develop psychic telepathy, your mind, and how to use it, a manual of practical psychology, practical mental influence, are useful works the reader may consult. New Thought culminated in Atkinson, and its value is minimal outside of his works as far as the reader can understand. New Thought had its roots in Transcendentalism and Christian Science, an occult variant of Christianism which is largely pantheistic naturalism, as critiqued in René Guénon's book The Spiritist Fallacy. In spite of his critique, however, what he called Spiritism or mediumistic may have some value, though most of its claims to communion with spirits were orchestrated in fake events, such as in the case of the United States and the Fox sisters. Other variants of the Illuminists are found in the Rosicrucian cosmo-conception by Max Heindel, a Danish émigré who set up a center in California and wrote various works such as The Astrological The Message of the Stars, which is a fair synopsis of basic astrology, Occult Principles of Health and Healing, a work prescribing a low animal protein vegetarian diet, and the Rosicrucian Cosmo Conception, a work which he plagiarized from William Walker Atkinson and amplified upon, as well as transforming Atkinson's Luciferian conception into a Jehovistic Christian one. His works prescribed a typical Illuminist lifestyle and worldview, only with a Christian twist, and much of them are biased in favor of this Jehovistic Christian slant, though still purporting to be Luciferian. Still other Kabbalists from this time are Dion Fortune, who wrote The Cosmic Doctrine and Psychic Self-Defense, which are classics in Kabbalah, and A.E. Waite, a Christian Kabbalist well critiqued by Gainon in the latter's Symbols of Sacred Science as a mere occult pretender. In conclusion, the Kabbalism of the turn of the last century outside of Masonry, Theosophy and more racialist, Ariosophical and Arminist works comprise a similar strain of Hebrew Christian Luciferianism, and all prescribed and adhere to a similar doctrine and Weltanschauung, only with subtle variations on the theme. Much can be derived from these works, though the errors they contain can present significant stumbling blocks and blinds, and can be simply dangerous alleys to venture down, especially as regards their ceremonial magic and the entities with whom these occultists interact. For a basic understanding of Illuminism, these works are representative samples and contain useful practical advice in terms of the fabric of reality, how to control and manipulate it, and how to augment one's power and direct one's thought force in the proper way, i.e. to empower oneself and to harm one's enemies.